the number one sports site in the world.
Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's.
Welcome to the fastest 2 hours in radio
on Yahoo Sports Radio
and YahooSportsRadio.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show
with the one and only, the triple threat, the Big E,
Alyssa Walker Campbell. The 6 foot former Sooner women's basketball player.
She can post, pin, and produce with some of today and yesterday's biggest stars.
Alyssa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Get ready to go beyond the X's and O's
with today's star athletes, coaches, and sports figures.
This is the Big E Sports Show
right now.
Now from the Quicken Loans studios of Yahoo Sports Radio.
Are you ready?
Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze.
Here she is, the one and only, the Big E, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome into Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. It is Friday night, and it is time for the fastest 2 hours in radio. Join us each Friday night from 8 to 10 Eastern Time and connect with us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. You can always go back. We are jam-packed with amazing guests, and you can go back and listen to the entirety of this broadcast at podcastarena.com. And before we get underway, all of you listeners out there, hey, you guys challenged us for a better mobile app, and we responded with the all-new Yahoo Sports Radio app, available now for your iOS or Android device. Just search Yahoo Sports Radio in Google Play or the App Store and download the new app from Gal Media. Well, I tell you what, it has been a historic week in the NBA. No shortage of storylines. And my point guard to kick off tonight's program is CNN World Sports Feature reporter and writer, the great Motez Bashara, who is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. Good evening, Motez.
Hi, Big E. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It has been an incredible week, and what a storybook ending on how to end a career. The exclamation point with Kobe Bryant as he scores 60 in that comeback victory. What were your takeaways?
It was a phenomenal ending in terms of like it being a Hollywood walk-away ending in Los Angeles. All the celebs were there, David Beckham, Snoop Dogg, Jay-Z, Jack, everybody. You know, just cheering him on at the end, and it was a very fitting way for him to go out. It was also fitting because he managed to take 50 shots in the game, which was mind-boggling. Nobody in over 30 years had taken 50 shots in a single game, much less somebody who was sort of, you know, ready for retirement and on literally the last legs of his career. So, you know, for me, it kind of harked back to the Kobe days, certainly in between when Shaq left and when they got Pau Gasol, when L.A. was a terrible team back then, and he would just jack up loads of shots. I think that's around the time when he scored 81 points. And, you know, the team was suffering, but his stats looked good. And I remember back then, George Karl at the time, you know, the famous coach, was a he was an announcer, or he was an analyst in Booth, and he said something that stuck in my mind. He said, he's a stat guy on a terrible team. And although that's not his legacy, of course, he did resort to that every once in a while, and that's what it came down to last night again.
Well, it was a Hollywood ending, as you're talking about his stat line, 22 of 50, 6 of 21 from 3, and he only had 4 assists.
that's a lot for him sometimes. I think it's good to see him go out now. It's been 20 years. He's obviously not nearly the player he used to be. And the Lakers, by the way, need to move on. You know, Kobe made $30 million this year. He made close to that the last couple of years. And he never once volunteered to cut his salary so that the Lakers could rebuild around him, as, you know, other stars in other sports have done. Very famously, Tom Brady has done it. But it was never a peep from him to do that. And I suppose he just thought, why should I? You know, I'm the one bringing the people to the Staples Center, and, you know, they owe me the money, which is fair enough. But, you know, they didn't win much the last few years either.
I was going to say, just listening to you describe, you know, talking about Kobe Bryant and his goodbye, it doesn't sound like you have mixed emotions. That it sounds like it's a good thing for the Lakers. It's time for them to move forward after 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they would ever say that publicly, but I'm certain the brass inside just thought, okay, you know, we need to move on. I mean, he barely played. This year he played significantly, but the last couple of years before that, the last 3 years, he was in and out. he ate up, you know, a big chunk, about half of their salary cap. So how on earth could they possibly rebuild? He's also famously not the easiest guy to get along with on the court. If mm-hmm. you're a new player, he has a tendency to sometimes alienate younger players, as we've seen this year. So I think if they want D'Angelo Russell and the other guys to kind of start to move on, they needed to sort of give him a fancy goodbye, which is what happened.
So how do you think he'll make this transition? I mean, obviously basketball has been his entire focus in life. I mean, I also have to wonder, I mean, will there be any temptation when all this dies down to perhaps make a comeback?
Oh, no. God, I hope not. I really don't think so. I mean, this was a perfect ending for him. It was like the sunset exit. I think most people don't want to see him come back. Unless he wants to do something like go play in Italy, you know, he can live on a nice house in the Riviera and he can play in that league and then he can take as many shots as he wants and, everybody would be happy. But, in terms of coming back to the NBA, I mean, I can't possibly see. His body's just giving up on him. So, no, I thought you were going to say, could he coach? And I doubt he'd be fit for that too.
You know, he's 37 years of age, and it makes me think about Dirk Nowitzki and what he has sacrificed with the Dallas Mavericks organization and how he was one of these superstar players that was willing to make a cut in his pay.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing about Dirk is he's still the number one guy on the team. It's like he hasn't turned into a Tim Duncan where they've just built around him and they have other superstars to take over. And his role gets kind of shifted down into kind of more of a supporting cast member. And with Dirk, you know, I guess they just have not been able to get other superstars around him. So he's still the guy, you know, he's still the guy who takes most of the shots and who they need to show up every night. And at 37 with all the mileage on him, you know, they just can't rely on him as much anymore.
And how incredible the fact that they have made the playoffs. How do you see that playing out between the Mavericks and the Thunder?
It'll be a fun series to watch. I love watching Oklahoma. I think they're one of the, you know, more entertaining teams in the league to watch. But I think, you know, if I'm guessing, I'll say Thunder in five.
Well, one thing we can count on, it will definitely be physical because that has turned into a bit of a rivalry. The great Motez Bashara is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, CNN World Sports feature writer. So let's transition now. We opened up talking about Kobe. What about the Golden State Warriors, the most wins in NBA history? What is it that defines this team, this historic season that the Golden State Warriors have had?
Well, number one, chemistry, absolutely. And number two, a lot of unselfishness, which sounds remarkable considering they have two guys who take so many of their shots. But if you watch them play, they have this miraculous chemistry where they just zip the ball around to each other and continuously find the open man. And also, something I've never seen before is guys who are very often pretty much open under the basket, giving up shots repeatedly to either Curry or Thompson outside of the three-point line to take, which are seemingly much more difficult shots, but not difficult for those guys. So a well-balanced, well-coached, well-orchestrated team, absolutely, certainly one of the greatest teams, obviously in regular season history, they're the greatest team. I mean, statistically, that's unchartered. But also, they will go down as one of the greatest in history. Everybody remembers the Chicago Bears from the NFL as being one of the greatest NFL teams of all time. Well, that Bears team only ever won one Super Bowl, but they were so incredibly dominant that one season that it's etched in everyone's memory who was around to watch it back then. And I think, funny enough, I think the Golden State Warriors will be in that conversation for a very, very long time. Of course, if they don't win the championship somehow, and it seems like they're a shoo-in, but if somehow they flounder, they'll go down more like the New England Patriots of 2008 who flopped in the Super Bowl, or like the 2001 Seattle Mariners, who had a record 116 games in Major League Baseball, who flopped in the playoffs. Or even someone like, I hate to say it, but Serena Williams last year, who was one game away from winning a Grand Slam, which hadn't been done in decades, and lost in the finals of the U.S. Open. So I see them as being a historic team, a beautiful team to watch. but one who, you know, could maybe flounder in the finals. Who knows?
They have been breathtaking to watch, and they really have revolutionized the way basketball is played. Just watching Steph Curry, it is truly incredible. Hey, we're flat out of time. The great Motez Bashara has been with us. Check him out, CNN World Sports feature reporter and writer, and we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much, Motez.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Stick around. Much more straight ahead. We're going to be visiting with Bob Ryan from ESPN.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
The Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans Studios right here at Yahoo Sports Radio. It has been a historic week in the NBA. We are so delighted to have back with us ESPN sports commentator, the great Bob Ryan. He is joining us tonight on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. How are you, Bob?
No, doing pretty well, thanks.
Well, it's good to hear your voice, and obviously history was made on Wednesday night. The Golden State Warriors surpassed the Chicago Bulls' wins record. From a historical perspective, I mean, Bob, how should we view this Golden State team? Should we wait and see until they become a dynasty and win their second championship?
No, the way the dialogue is framed these days, the fact of the matter is that championships are what matter. So they must complete this, or else they will be viewed in the same light as the Patriots in 07, who went undefeated to the Super Bowl. Now, they do have a back-to-back situation here in championships. I just feared the way that people think these days, the way they are led, that they will be more remembered if they do not win this thing.
Oh, yeah.
For not having won it after the record-setting regular season, more than the fact that they won last year and that they had a 2-year spectacular run. So I advise them to go out and win.
Oh, very good. Well, ESPN's very own Bob Ryan is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're talking some NBA, and obviously, as you just mentioned, I mean, it's been an epic season for Golden State. So what kind of value should we place on 73 wins in the regular season? I mean, it's a tremendous accomplishment. I mean, how significant is it breaking the most wins in NBA history in the regular season?
Well, I've always believed that people have underplayed the essence of the regular season in the NBA, which I've been following very closely since 1969. And I always thought one of the great accomplishments of the vintage Celtics of the Red Auerbach era and Bill Russell era was that they won 8 straight consecutive regular seasons to the point, which means that they went in and faced everybody's best shot all those times and emerged as number one. That's a tremendous dedication. That's a sense of it shows what kind of pride they had in professionalism. I think I've covered teams that had spectacular regular seasons. The 72-73 Celtics won 68 games, did not win the championship. We argue in Boston due to an injury to John Havlicek, but the fact is they didn't win it. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't a wonderful season to have lived through. I think people underplay what it means, the night in, night out, the fact come February and early March, your motivation has to be renewed somehow. You've got to go out and play under all these and many different kind of circumstances. I admire teams that have great regular seasons. And I know we as a society, sports society, value championships above all. And I think that we need to start giving more credit to teams that have wonderful regular seasons.
You know, Bob, I have to wonder, too, I mean, will going for 73 wins, I mean, is this going to help or hurt the Warriors in the playoffs? Because I have to wonder, too, how much this is maybe going to impact them, perhaps physically. What about mentally? I mean, that's quite a grind.
Right. Mental is the bigger issue for them. They happen to be a relatively young team. They do not rely on any real aged guys. I mean, the age for them is late 20s, early 30s. The prime players, the key players, are all in their absolute youth, Curry and Green and Thompson. They are the core three. Barnes is a kid. The young veterans they have are people such as Iguodala
and maybe Sean Livingston. Iguodala's not all that old. And Bogut's into his career, but he's hardly ancient. They really don't. And Barbosa's been around the block. He's not a primary player. He's an extra added attraction. So their key players can. It's not going to be physical, but yet you're right about the mental thing. The mental dedication they needed to get this job done when it was identified so early that they had a chance. When they got off to that great start, can they beat the Bulls? This is all they've been hearing about for 4 months. 4 months.
I know.
So that's why, and they cut it close.
Yeah.
Then they had a couple of dips. They lost those two home games, which I know shocked their fans. And they cut it close. They went down to the last game, but boy, did they. Were they ready or what? They came out and were themselves and all those threes, and Curry particularly was ready with 10 threes, and I admire them. I really have a great deal of respect for them.
ESPN's Bob Ryan, longtime sports columnist. He was with the Boston Globe. Bob Ryan is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And you bring up a great point, Bob, because throughout the years, you have covered the biggest and best in sports in the NBA. So what is your perception of Steph Curry? I mean, just you're talking about that electric performance that he had. I mean, he got off to a fast start on Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm. He is getting his acclamation from all the elders as the greatest shooter they've ever seen. And when you combine the depth, the range is the greatest range. They're all in awe of his range. The ability to get your own shot without help, which he can do because of his phenomenal ball handling, any way he can create space for himself, whether it's in the lane or whether it's 35 feet away. And on top of which, he's a consummate artist moving without the ball. He gets you both ways. He comes off picks. He circles on back and in and out and in and out. He can catch and fire with incredible speed. He has no weakness. He has no but. He also doesn't have a spot. He can hit from left corner, left wing, right wing, down the middle, doesn't matter. And he can go to the basket and he can get to 8 or 10 assists in the game in which he will have 35 points. He's just a wonderful player.
Hey, Bob Ryan, with us just a couple more minutes right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. Also, on Wednesday night, we said goodbye to Kobe Bryant. He has had his memorable farewell tour. What are you going to remember the most, those 60?
Well, that's going to be a coda, naturally. You will forever associate him with one of the great exits in the history of American sport, if not the greatest, for someone who wasn't winning a championship. Obviously, the consummate thing was winning a championship, the John Elway farewell. But if you're not going to do that, you want to give them something to remember you by, and boy, did Kobe do that. I think it's amazing. 40 would have been a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful way to go out. 30 would have been, oh, my God. 40 would have been ridiculous. 50 would have been, I think, drug testing. And 60 is there's no word to describe going out with 60. People have downplayed, meaningless game. Well, yeah, it was a meaningless game, but it was a very hedge game. It was a game which he didn't want to perform at a high level. The other team wanted to win the game. They make it sound as if this was going at 75-mile-an-hour fastball down the middle of the Mickey Mantle. No, it wasn't that. He was making shots when people were guarding him. He was going to the basket, making difficult shots. He was hitting his outside shot. No, absolutely not. I reject that completely. I think it was a fantastic performance. Overall, a career. It's one of the great careers of all time. I think he's I still think he's a top 5 player. I think he's a top 10 or 11 player, depending on, we can argue that nuance, but he's certainly a player that will always be remembered. And he's the closest thing to Michael Jordan that we've seen in both the range of his skill, his size, and his temperament.
Well, we're looking forward to the first round of the NBA playoffs as they'll be underway this weekend. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, Bob. Safe travels, and I promise we'll catch up with you again real soon. Thank you so much.
Very good. That was fun. Okay, bye-bye.
Of course. Much more straight ahead in hour number one right here on YSR. You stay close.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell,
the Big E.
Alyssa Walker Campbell, back with you at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. on this Friday night. We are deep in the heart of Texas here in Houston, and right now we're going to shift gears. We're going to go around the horn and talk some Astros baseball. Astros beat writer for MLB.com and author Brian McTaggart is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. His new book, 100 Things Astro Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It is the ultimate resource for true fans of the Houston Astros. We're going to encourage you to go out and get a copy. Good evening, Brian. It's nice to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, congratulations on the book. And before we take time for that review, give us the pulse on how things are playing out so far. Some early impressions from the Houston Astros.
Well, they're scuffling a little bit. That's not a surprise if you've watched them. They're really not pitching very well, giving up too many home runs, walking too many batters, which is tough because offensively they're clicking pretty well for the most part. They do have a couple of spots in the lineup that are struggling, but they are leading the major leagues in home runs. So I think for them to kind of get it turned around a little bit, it's going to start with pitching, which, of course, is the way the game's been played for 100 years. It all starts with pitching, right? So they got to get the starting pitching ironed out, the bullpen ironed out. But we're only about 2 weeks in, so they got a long way to go, but they have some challenges ahead of them for sure.
You know, Brian, you mentioned offensively that they're clicking on all cylinders. Talk to me about the big headlines with Astros rookie Tyler White named AL Player of the Week. This is a feel-good story. Tell me about his dynamic play and production.
Yeah, Tyler White is a 33rd-round draft pick, which is very unusual. A guy is drafted that late in the majors, and he was a walk-on in college. So he's kind of been a guy who really hasn't been on anybody's radar through his whole career. But all he did once the Astros drafted him was hit through the minor leagues, and they couldn't help but keep promoting him. And then last year in AAA, he was hitting close to 400. And he came to spring training with a chance to win the first base job. And so what he'd do in spring training, he hit. And so He started the season at first base, and he's done nothing but hitting around 500, 9 or 10 games into the season, and showing some pop as well with 3 home runs. You know, he's not a big kid. He's probably 5'11", 6 feet. He has a little bit of a funky swing, but he's got great bat to ball skills. Doesn't try to do too much. Just doesn't seem overwhelmed or too big for the moment. And it's just been really, really fun to see. And he's the kind of player that lineup needs. He doesn't strike out a lot. Makes contact, and they need as many of those guys as they can get. But he's inched his way up to the lineup now. He hits fifth on most nights, and pretty cool story about Tyler White.
You know, you share about his background. I enjoyed your feature on MLB.com about him. That, you know, he really doesn't seem overwhelmed by who he's facing. He's got incredible confidence, and he's got swagger at the plate.
Yeah, and I think you see a lot of guys now that swing so hard, they swing and they fall down or go to a knee and just trying to hit that long ball. And it's easy to do at Minute Maid Park because you look at left field and the Crawford boxes are only 315 feet and you're like, wow, I can get one up there. But Tyler has the same approach, you know, every time, just that really steady, even-handed swing. And he swings at strikes. You don't see him chasing a lot of balls out of the strike zone. And that's something that I'm sure that the Astros wish the rest of their players can do. But he's just a natural hitter, and it's going to be interesting to watch how he progresses the rest of his career. Will he get more power? How are teams going to start playing him? Are they going to start shifting him? He hits the ball at the middle a lot. So he's got some challenges ahead, but so far, so good.
What do you think is the reason why he has been able to transform his game and really surprise everybody?
Well, I think he's just sticking to what he's done his whole life. I mean, he played high school ball. He was a great hitter. He didn't have any scholarship offers, like I said, and he walked on at Western Carolina, and he was a great hitter at Western Carolina. And because of his size and, you know, the fact he just wasn't a power hitter, he just never, the scouts just didn't fall in love with him like one of these, you know, like one of these big 6'3" guys that scouts just drool over. And so the Astros took a shot at him, and I think in a way that's benefited him because there's no pressure on him. He hasn't been, a lot of people haven't come up and said, well, you need to hit this way and this way. He's just kind of laid in the weeds and hit the way he knows how to hit, and it's worked so far.
You're listening to the voice of Brian McTaggart. He is the Astros beat writer for MLB.com. We're going to be talking about here momentarily the author of his new book, 100 Things Astro Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. We would love for you to connect with us. Join us online at Twitter tonight at eRadio Sports. And you can always go back and listen to the entirety of this interview at podcastarena.com. Click on the YSR tab. Now, Brian, obviously some other news this week is that the longtime Astros general manager, Speck Richardson, he dies at the age of 93. How will he be remembered?
Well, Speck is going to be remembered for making really some of the, I guess, some of the most lopsided trades in Astros history. I guess at the top of the list, you have to look at Joe Morgan. He traded Joe Morgan away.
Right.
Joe Morgan began his career in Houston. They traded him away to the Cincinnati Reds, and he went on to become the cornerstone of the Big Red Machine. He was a two-time MVP and won two World Series. Now, Morgan came back at the end of his career in 1980, but the bulk and the good years of his career were spent in Cincinnati after he was traded away. The same can be said for Rusty Staub, who was a young, up-and-coming star with the Astros, and or the Colt 45s, rather, and he got traded away and ended up having a pretty long and illustrious career with a lot of clubs, including the Expos and the Mets. And so that was a trade I think he would like to have back as well. And then another one is Mike Cuellar, a pitcher the Astros had, traded him to the Orioles. And then he was, I think, a two-time 20-game winner on that great Orioles pitching staff in the 1970s. And Mike Cuellar, you know, went on to do some terrific things, and you know, another one they would like to have back. So, you know, unfortunately for Speck, you know, he was a good baseball man and did a lot of good things. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to some of those trades that he made, trading away some young players who went on to be stars elsewhere that I'm sure that he would like to have back.
And his decisions, certainly, as you said, they have impacted the Astros long-term. They impacted them. Tell us about your new book, 100 Things Astro Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It is jam-packed with lots of great and memorable stories.
Yeah, the book is basically, it's 100 chapters of 100 different events, stories, people, things you should go or do if you're an Astros fan. It's mostly about Astros history and events in Astros history. I mean, we cover everything from the start of the franchise to the Astrodome to the scoreboard to the rainbow jerseys, and then just about every great player in franchise history, we have a chapter on him. And I tried to talk to as many players as I can, and you know, we covered guys from Dickie Thon and Enos Cabell to Jeff Bagwell and Craig Biggio and Terry Poole and everybody in between. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun. I mean, I think if you're an Astros fan, you're going to read this, and a lot of this stuff you're going to know, and you're going to remember and have some good memories. And then I think a lot of it you might not know, and hopefully you'll be able to say, wow, that was pretty cool, I didn't realize that. Or maybe you know maybe you know some of the story and you can find out a little bit more. It's sort of like an encyclopedia or a Bible, if you will, for Astros fans. And it's pretty timely. I mean, we go all the way through last year's season. We talk about last year's season and their improbable run of the playoffs. And there's a chapter about Carlos Correa and how he got his start and being drafted and so forth. And we go all the way back to the early 1960s when the Colt 45s were born. So no matter how old you are or how long you've been following the Astros, there's stories in there and things you can learn. And so far the response has been good. And you know, we hope, you know, who knows, maybe after this summer we can add a few more chapters to it.
You bet. Hey, Astros beat writer for MLB.com, Brian McTaggart, and we're talking about his brand new book, 100 Things Astro Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. So how much better are the Astros than they were in 2015? Because they've returned nearly every key player from last season's playoff run.
Yeah, they returned every key player pretty much. They added a few players as well. They traded for Ken Giles, to go in the bullpen. He's a hard-throwing reliever, and so far Ken's off to a little bit of a rough start, allowing 3 home runs in his first 4 outings. But, you know, I think he'll get it ironed out. They added some pitching, starting pitching in Doug Pfister. And so he stepped in, and, you know, he'll do a good job. Lance McCullers started the year on the disabled list. So did Evan Gattis, recently returned from the disabled list. But, you know, they should be better. I know Sports Illustrated picked them to win the World Series, and, you know, unlike last year, they came out of nowhere. Nobody expected them to do anything, and now they have expectations on them. And they had a lot of media attention during spring training. And like I said, they had the Sports Illustrated cover, and people are kind of gunning for them now.
Okay, Brian McTaggart has been with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Astros beat writer with MLB.com. He's got some great stuff online. Also, go out and get a copy of his brand new book, 100 Things Astro Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Congratulations, Brian. You were a fantastic guest. We look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Much more coming up right here at YSR. You stay close.
You're listening to the Big East Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio. Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell. The Big E.
Elissa Walker Campbell, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we are inside the Quicken Loans studios. Of course, all of our guests tonight are joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. It is time now to shift gears for our weekly book review that we include each and every week in our program. We're delighted to have with us baseball columnist from Yahoo Sports, Jeff Passan. He has just released his new book titled The Arm, Inside the Billion-Dollar Mystery of the Most Valuable Commodity in Sports. Highly recommend this book. It's even been endorsed by Cy Young Award winner John Smoltz. And he says this is the most important baseball book in years. Good evening. It's nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Alyssa.
There's a lot to get into. I want to say, first and foremost, congratulations on your book. You did an amazing job highlighting just this frequent operation. How has Tommy John surgery affected Major League Baseball?
In a lot of ways. I mean, it's not just the fact that it's happening more and more frequently, but in the amount of dollars cost. I mean, it's something that's cost hundreds of millions of dollars throughout the years and really made us think a little bit differently about the pitching arm and how fragile it is. I mean, we've known ever since overhand throwing started in the 1880s that guys are getting hurt, but it hasn't come on this young and in this great frequency, I think, ever before. And the scary part is that it's infiltrating the youth system too right now. I mean, the number that jumps out the most is a study of Tommy John surgeries between 2007 and 2011 showed that 56.8% were on 15 to 19-year-olds.
Wow.
So this is not just a major league problem. This is a baseball problem, and this, I think, is particularly a youth problem at this point that parents and coaches need to get on board with and educate themselves and become more conscientious before it gets even worse than it is already.
Jeff, was that one of the goals of the book, to serve as a wake-up call, not only for what's going on in Major League Baseball, but on young arms, that this, you know, playing year-round baseball, the effects of on the young arm?
You know, going into it, no, because I don't think I knew just how bad it was.
Okay.
And my son at the time was 5 years old, and, you know, I wanted to, he loved baseball even back then, still loves it now, and I wanted to understand it for his sake, but I don't think I realized just how widespread this is. And the word epidemic gets thrown out when it comes to the major leaguers and this happening. I don't know if you can call that an epidemic necessarily. It's certainly a problem. It's certainly an issue. But when you're talking about children's health, that's when the word epidemic, I think, applies. And when you see this happening as frequently as it is now, I don't think anyone can argue that it isn't an epidemic.
Jeff Passan is with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We would love to hear from you. Connect with us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. He is an MLB columnist for our very own Yahoo Sports, best-selling author. Go ahead and get a copy of his new book. It is titled The Arm, Inside the Billion-Dollar Mystery of the Most Valuable Commodity in Sports. It's received tremendous reviews and endorsements. Tell me this, Jeff. Okay, so what was your motivation to write the book? What did you want to enlighten the reader about?
Well, I just wanted to answer a simple question at first. Why does Major League Baseball spend $1.5 billion a year on something it doesn't understand? And that's what struck me more than anything. The way that baseball players are being used these days and the way that pitchers are being reared, it just doesn't have a lot of logic behind it. It's almost like we've gotten to the point now where, well, yeah, guys threw a lot in the past, so let's have them throw less frequently. And the injuries haven't abated. If anything, they've gotten a little bit worse. And so that's not working. And if that's not working, I wondered why an industry that's as generally efficient and smart as baseball is continues doing the same thing and slowly devolving into the definition of insanity.
So who did you spend some time with from my takeaways from the book, the Diamondback pitcher, Daniel Hudson? What was their story?
Yeah, Daniel Hudson and Todd Coffey, who was with the Los Angeles Dodgers at the time, both blew their ulnar collateral ligament right around the same time, and both had Tommy John surgery around the same time. And I felt like in order to tell the real story of the arm, I needed to have somebody's arm to tell it about. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened both of them said yes, and I was not going to turn either of them down. So for 3.5+ years, I followed them around, shadowed them, sat in on a surgery, and saw the ups and downs of what it's like rehabbing not just your arm when you're coming back from Tommy John surgery, but a mind that is full of doubts and fears and concerns.
And I understand you also had a rare one-on-one interview with Sandy Koufax.
I did, and it was interesting just hearing his perspective on the pitching arm, because let's remember, Sandy Koufax might have been the most talented pitcher in history, but sure. He retired at 30 years old because doctors told him if he kept pitching, his arm might develop, they called it just arthritis back then, and he wouldn't be able to use it for the rest of his life. I talked with Frank Jobe, the doctor who conceived Tommy John surgery before his passing, and Dr. Jobe said, if I had thought of the procedure 10 years earlier, it probably would be called Sandy Koufax surgery. So just goes to show you that this is not something that's new. Guys got injured back then, and the idea that 300-inning pitchers of the 1940s and 50s and 60s mean pitchers were so much better back then. I just don't think it's true. I think that these days we could absolutely breed 300-inning pitchers. I just think the sacrifice you make in doing so are a giant graveyard of broken arms along the way.
You've been listening to the voice of Jeff Passan, the MLB columnist with Yahoo Sports. Go out and get a copy of his brand new book. It is titled The Arm, Inside the $1 Billion Mystery of the Most Valuable Commodity in Sports. Congratulations, Jeff. We look forward to our next conversation.
Look forward to it too, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Much more straight ahead in hour number two, right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter @eRadioSports. We will be right back.